From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for the week ending the 27th of July. We're here in our normal place at our normal time across the street from the state capitol. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio, joined by our pro bono political correspondent, that's your title,
yes,
Kate Fulmar.
Good morning.
Who's back. And Anthony York, the overlord editor of Capitol Weekly.
But if Kate, are you implying that I get paid for this podcast? Because if you have, I'm going to give you my address again when we get off
the air.
He's implying that you get paid in general.
I think I said a couple of weeks ago that we pay in tote bags in public radio, so you're not getting a whole big salary. Well, we are here to talk about the week's political news, and quite frankly, there really is only one story, which is this budget, let's do the synonyms, impasse, gridlock, stalemate.
Well, we're no longer doing fiscal terrorism, right?
No, we're not, and that's part of what happened this week. But clearly, it was another week of, I'm not really even sure I would call it any kind of movement, but let's just recap briefly. Posturing is probably pretty good. Let's recap briefly what happened, which is largely that the Senate Democrats, which is where, if you have not been following this every day, the budget is stuck in the state Senate after the Assembly passed it and went home. Democrats in the Senate, majority Democrats, told minority Republicans, come up with what you want. Come up, just don't, give us a specific idea of what you want to cut out of the budget. Republicans in the Senate put out a list that I happen to bring here into the studio, $842.4 million in cuts that they suggested, which I think largely are dead on arrival. And then, boom, we're sitting here at the end of the week with a log jam. I mean, really is. I mean, I'm not sure anybody really knows how to get out of this.
Well, I've got some ideas, but nobody cares what I think. But, I do think we're approaching the end here. I mean, really, when you look at this, I mean, what's got to be aggravating for people who want this budget, especially in the Senate, the Democratic leadership and the governor, is that we're really talking about $500 million worth of cuts. I mean, we're holding up a $105 billion budget over $500 million. The Republicans say that this year's budget is about $700 million out of whack. And the governor has already agreed, he's already cut a deal with the Assembly to blue pencil about $200 million out of the budget in spending cuts.
Which is using his line item veto authority.
With a blue pencil.
Have you ever seen the blue pencil?
I am the blue pencil. So really, I mean, I think that there's more than just the philosophical or the baseline dollars at stake here. I think a lot of this has to do with the way that Senate Republicans feel they've been treated by the governor, and also some internal caucus politics inside the Senate Republican caucus.
Well, and you wrote about that this week a little bit, kind of going chronicling back in Capitol Weekly, chronicling back the seeds of this discontent.
Wow.
It's the literary references.
Excellent.
Does that make this the summer of my discontent?
I believe it does.
Okay.
Thank you.
But this was back in the winter of my discontent where this all began in December of 06. And that was in the 15-member Republican caucus. Senator Jim Batten, Republican from La Quinta, challenged Dick Ackerman's leadership. This came just after the special election where Governor Schwarzenegger's reelection in 06, where the governor spent a lot of time distancing himself from Republicans, from Republican causes, mm-hmm.
And generally thumbing his nose, right? I mean, a lot of people thought that the governor thumbed his nose at his own party,
right?
Repeatedly last year,
and angered a lot of people in the process. It also came after Republicans in both the Assembly and the Senate agreed to easy passage of a budget and billions of dollars in infrastructure bonds that to be placed on the ballot, all sort of under the pressures of an election year. Republicans in the Senate at the time challenged the conservatives in the Republican caucus challenged Dick Ackerman, saying that their concerns hadn't been heard. This was 2 weeks after in the Assembly. The Assembly Republicans dumped their leader, George Plesha, for the same reasons. Ackerman barely survived this challenge just by one vote, and I think now he's those lessons from December. He came out of that leadership struggle vowing to take a harder line with the governor, and here we are 7 months later, and he's doing exactly that.
Mm-hmm. That being said, why do you think we're closer to the end than not? I mean, you said you see an end game somehow, or do? I mean, tell me, explain.
Well, I
defend
think,
yourself, Mr. York.
Well, we're all a day closer to our death, John. So,
oh my, the Maudlin podcast.
the poetry reading to follow, but. I think what's happening here, you know, the Senate Republicans laid out an additional $800 million worth of cuts. I had a discussion this week with Dennis Hollingsworth, the vice chair of the Budget Committee, of the Senate Budget Committee, and I asked him, in essence, whether this was a roadmap for the governor. I know that the governor's office has approached Senator Ackerman and the Republican leadership in the Senate saying, hey, is there a way to do this without the Assembly coming back in? Can you give us some sense of, can we make a deal? Maybe I think what ends up happening is the governor ends up blue penciling another couple hundred million dollars out of this budget, and it's done. And I think that this list that was unveiled on Wednesday-ish, by the Senate Republicans is sort of a roadmap for the governor, and I think that this gets done, my guess is, in the next week.
So do you guys think this is just the Senate Republicans saying, you can't take us for granted anymore to the governor, that you have to be receptive to us and you have to listen to us? Or,
well, I think there's a certain part of that, but I mean, I think the real tough part to discern at this point, I mean, Anthony's laid out a pretty good case for how you get out of this. That being said, everybody realizes that there's got to be a safe political landing for everybody out of this. I mean, Senate Republicans are not going to give up and be looked like they backed down and they caved in and whatever at this point, I don't think. I think that would be tough. So they've got to have a landing pad. The question is that enough of a landing pad? I mean, these discussions about the governor blue penciling out some spending are great, but then what happens to this dynamic of this reform of environmental laws, the CEQA law? What happens to some of these other things that they've said they had to have? I mean, it's a question without an answer so far. But I mean, is that enough safe enough political landing? I mean,
don't you think those are negotiating chips, though? I mean, it seems to me that frequently the GOP brings in near the end things that are only tenuously related to the budget and then jettisons them eventually to get a deal.
Well, that certainly happened in the past. We were talking about this, Kate and I were talking about before we started recording the podcast. But and I want to hearken back to the past just for a moment, because I cleanly, vividly remember sitting in the hallway outside the governor's office with a bunch of reporters, including Ms. Fulmar, playing Trivial Pursuit a couple of years ago, waiting for a budget deal. But the difference was the governor was
much.
What's that?
You brought us pizza that
day. I did go make the pizza run. Another thing, you know, for all of my fellow brethren press corps members.
Both of them.
Both. Yes. Well, there were more than two there.
Right.
But another difference from back then, too, is the dynamic of the governor. Now, the governor's mm-hmm. office has been very sensitive about saying he's not in, you know, any accusations that he's not engaged in this budget debate. But he was engaged in a different way several years ago,
right.
And he's evolved. I mean, is that fair to say?
No, I think that's absolutely true. What would that have been? The summer of...
Well, it's 2004 where he called them girly men for not passing the budget.
Yeah, and then and there were negotiations over, I remember, July 4th weekend, and I remember seeing, you know, Richard Costigan and... I'm trying to...
Top Schwarzenegger staffer.
Yeah, top Schwarzenegger staffer, Richard Costigan. And you never saw Pat come out. But Mike Genest, who was then a deputy in the finance department and who's now the head of the finance department. And I remember seeing them all and, you know, the speaker's folks and the pro tem's folks and the GOP's folks all running in and out of those offices all day. And we'd like trying to figure out, was Costigan smiling or was he grumpy or was... But there was a real sense that Schwarzenegger was there doing stuff for hours on end and being actively involved in consultations rather than, you know, leaving most of that work to legislative leaders.
Of course, he had a little bit more flexibility then with Republicans in the legislature. I mean, you know, one of the stories that we've heard time and again from probably both on background and somewhat on the record has been this notion that he has been largely rebuffed in trying to get Republican senators down to his office, yeah. either by the caucus in general or by some members of the Senate Republican mm-hmm. caucus, individual senators, who didn't want to go down and be schmoozed.
Right. And this was something that we wrote about this week as well. We mentioned one of the changing dynamics. The thought always in the Senate was, you've got Abel Maldonado and Jeff Denham. Abel Maldonado, a moderate Republican from Santa Maria who's got an election next year, and Jeff Denham, a Republican from Merced, who is sitting in a district that was drawn for a Democrat and plays to a more moderate constituency. And they were always pretty safe bets for budget votes. Maldonado is the only Republican who has not voted no on the budget.
He's widely believed to be the one Republican at this point who would vote for the budget as it stands.
Because he's got an election next year in that moderate district. Mm-hmm. Jeff Denham now has just been reelected to a second and probably final term in the state Senate, barring the change in the term limits law. But Denham is running for lieutenant governor next year. And he's running for lieutenant governor in a closed Republican primary. And that's a very different audience, very different constituency.
Well, right, exactly. And what's the one thing with partisan diehard Republicans that probably will buy you a lot of support is standing firm on spending at the state capitol.
As if there's not enough material for a Republican to bash Jeff Denham in a Republican primary already. But I think that's part of what's complicating. That's one of the factors that's complicating getting a deal done this year.
And you know, to backtrack again for those who may forget this, it takes two Republican votes in the state Senate to pass a budget. It takes 27 votes. There are 25 Democrats. You just need a couple of these 15 Republican senators.
Mm-hmm. In years past, there's been sort of a process of picking them off, giving them something that they wanted for their district or a pet project
right.
To sort of buy those two votes. I mean buy in the most charitable sense of the word.
Right, right. But, coerce or convince them it was in their best interest. Then Governor Davis was quite good at that at the end of his time, you know, with pulling a couple of votes here or there as he needed to get budgets passed. But it definitely has been more complicated this time. There was also this rhetoric that came out this week that got some attention. This Anthony, you alluded to it earlier, this notion of Democrats accusing Republicans of being, what was it, fiscal terrorists? Or it depended on who you talked to as the phrase came out.
Yeah.
And
right.
Dave Cox, a state senator from the Sacramento area, even came out to reporters the other day with a photo of Osama bin Laden saying, "This is a real terrorist, you know, how dare they say that?" And the rhetoric got hot and then it cooled off a little bit again. But, I mean, you know, one of the things that I'm not sure I understand and I don't know if anybody understands is even if you get – I mean, unless you get the Anthony's theory, which is a very good theory that the governor would just line item veto out some spending, unless you get that and you still demand the assembly to come back, that doesn't seem like a very workable alternative. I mean, the assembly's not going to come back, right? Nobody's heard the assembly say they'd come back.
It doesn't look like it, although,
right.
you know, the assembly threw this hot potato at the Senate by passing a budget. There's no reason why – if the Senate wanted to, if they were willing to, they could do the same to the Assembly. They could throw it on the Assembly could say, "Hey, we're not coming back till August 20th. But could you imagine if there was a budget sitting there and another budget sitting in the Assembly and people weren't getting paid and transportation projects were stalled and Fabian Nunez just said, "Hey, we're not reconvening." I mean, I don't know that it'll come to that. My guess is that they probably will try to work a deal that doesn't involve the Assembly coming back because Senator Parada doesn't seem terribly interested at this point in having the Assembly come back either. So, blue penciling is one way, or cutting a deal that's outside of the budget, like we saw in the Assembly version of the budget. It came attached with a tax cut package for the next budget year, not for 2007-08, but actually for 2008-09 budget year. That was not linked to the budget per se, but it was the passage of that bill helped ease the passage of the budget out of the Assembly. That bill quickly died in the Senate. So something like that could happen where there may be a package of additional cuts that the Assembly could agree to pass, but maybe not until August 20th when they reconvene.
Right. What do either of you think about this lingering question around the Capitol for the last several months, but it's clearly during this budget discussion, which is the impact, if any, of the notion to change term limits, to modify term limits, to shorten the overall amount of time a legislator can spend in Sacramento from 14 years to 12 years, but to allow a legislator to spend all of that time in one house. And by quirk or intention, not quirk, that's a little not making it specific enough, but by intention, would help extend the legislative leadership terms of Speaker Fabian Nunez and Senate President Pro Tem Don Parada. Now, there's
and Senate Republican Leader Dick Ackerman.
Yeah, I was going to say, and in addition to several other lawmakers, but yes, Ackerman right. very specifically. It's a great parlor game as to how much impact that has played on all kinds of things at the Capitol so far this year. Kate, what do you think?
Well, it's hard to speculate about that, but certainly a lot of folks believe that Nunez was trying to be amenable and to look productive, to help ease passage of that initiative. He would say that he was just being productive and accomplishing things because that's what lawmakers do. But, you know, and the assembly passed a budget and went home. I'm not sure what the end game is over in the Senate.
Well, it's ironic, you know, because
let's say really quickly, sorry to interrupt you, Anthony, but yeah. the term limits initiative was submitted now for the ballot this past week. They
right.
submitted 1.1 million signatures, which is virtually a lock to get it on the February right. 2008 ballot.
Right. And I mean, the irony of what's going on in the Senate is, you know, several Republican senators have told me personally that at the end of that leadership challenge that we alluded to earlier in the podcast or mentioned early in the podcast, Ackerman told his caucus that he would be stepping down at the end of the budget. Since then, you know, there were rumblings a couple weeks ago about some maneuvering on the leadership within the leadership in the Senate Republican caucus. And Ackerman at the time was quoted in the Orange County Register as saying that he was going to hold on until February or possibly April. And that leads a lot of people to believe that, hey, maybe he's interested in seeing if this term limits thing passes in February and maybe he'll stick around.
Oh, but then don't you think but then isn't holding up the budget counterintuitive in some ways?
Right. Well, that's the
conventional
irony.
Conventional wisdom is that you want to get along and look like you're really
right.
functioning, and California is governable, darn it.
But that's the catch-22 that Ackerman's in, is that on the one hand, you know, a speedy budget may perhaps ease the passage of the term limits law in February. On the other hand, it might lead to Ackerman's ouster as Republican leader because of some of the discontent within the caucus for how Ackerman dealt with the governor last time around. So it's a tough spot for Ackerman, but I think in the short term it's one step at a time. I think if nothing else out of this, in a strange way, this is sort of consolidating Ackerman's leadership within his caucus.
And I'm going to play the skeptic just for a moment that I'm not sure any of this budget debate impacts the term limits political campaign.
You probably think Oswald acted alone,
John. And the reason. That's another podcast. And the reason I think I'm kind of inclined to think that at this point is, I mean, the term limits thing is going to be a huge political battle with a lot of money spent and a lot of larger, broader themes put out there about the legislature. And quite frankly, I think it just comes down to the campaign and whether or not voters believe that it's a reduction in years in Sacramento or whether they are convinced that it is a way to keep the powerful in office. And so, I mean, it seems like to me by the time we get to January, let's say, and we're in the thick of a campaign on term limits, is anybody really going to remember, you know, the month of July? Now, I could be wrong, and we'll sure rewind the tape if we're still doing the podcast at this point. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
And it's also going to be a presidential primary in both parties. Is anyone even going to be talking about term limits?
Which could be another problem altogether.
Right. Or benefit, perhaps.
Or benefit for somebody's perspective. And then just quickly, I wanted to touch on this fact that Republicans have been pushing for something that bubbled up again. On Thursday, the governor did his first press conference to talk about the budget, which was interesting because I think that there was a conventional wisdom among the Schwarzenegger people at one point to not have him come out and fan the flame somehow, as we alluded mm-hmm. to, the Gurleyman thing. I think everybody clearly remembers where he kind of
ad-libbed.
Went a little too far in pushing for a budget deal a few years ago. But I think ultimately he came out on Thursday, I think to put a little bit of the squeeze out there and to try to paint a little like a dire situation. You know, we won't be able to fight fires mm-hmm. and things like that. But in that press conference, a certain pesky reporter, me, asked him about his position on this notion of reforming CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, which is something Republicans have wanted. And for those of you who haven't followed this, largely what Republicans want is they want some changes so that construction projects, building projects that are going on around the state right now do not have to take into account their impact on global warming until the full implementation happens of last year's global warming law. So it's almost like a grandfathering in of these projects so that they don't have to do that. Because as we know, Attorney General Jerry Brown has been pushing for global warming issues to be included down in San Bernardino, and there's a legal action going there. Republicans are using this as the Jerry Brown's going too far kind of slogan.
And this is the beginning of the Jerry Brown for Governor campaign, but that's another podcast.
Right.
That's all. Yeah, that's not too far down the road, another right. podcast.
Right. Well, John Garamendi kicked his off with the whales a few months ago.
We've all got our issues.
We've all got to get started.
What's interesting is that usually when we say that's another podcast, it's like a total tangent to politics, but that actually is another podcast.
Well, my apologies for that.
No. Let me write that down. Next week, we'll talk anyway. But the question has been, where's the governor sit on this thing? I mean, you know, and I think the governor's answer was a little bit of everything, which is kind of how it goes sometimes, of a, I support the idea, but I don't really necessarily want it in the budget, but I haven't really read the proposal they have, but I support the idea something needs to change.
But if it, you know, the legislature has a right to include it in the budget if they want, but we don't have to.
Right.
But look, for Republicans, this is their one leverage point. This is, I mean, we're seeing increasingly in that policy is being made as part of these budget deals because it's the only chance that Republicans have to get their policy, their pet policy projects. Whoa, that's a lot of alliteration. Thrown in. You know, we've been writing a little bit about this in our paper, but this is, you know, Republican bills get demolished in the committee process, in the legislative process, and they sometimes get resurrected and thrown in as sweetener. So for Schwarzenegger to say, hey, I'm open to this idea, but let's not do it in the budget, I think Republicans are going to be reluctant, saying, hey, look, this is our one chance. This is our one point in the year where we get to present our wish list and flex our muscles a little bit.
And does this issue at all have any public resonance with, you know, the realities of implementing this huge global warming movement that the governor championed or not?
I think it's going to be very difficult for the assembly, for example, to sign off on something after the assembly blasted the governor, Speaker Nunez blasted the governor for dismissing Robert Sawyer at the head of the Air Resources Board. There was sort of a he said, she said about whether he was fired for going too quickly or too slow. On implementing AB 32, it's going to be very hard for Nunez to tell his caucus, okay, we need to go up and support this sort of a slowing down, essentially, of the implementation of AB 32.
Well, and just as the governor is staking a lot of his legacy on combating global warming, so is Speaker Nunez.
Absolutely.
I have a hard time picturing him wanting to go along or trying to convince his colleagues to go along with anything that smacks of, you know, going slow or rolling back the global warming bill.
Let me take one last scrap on the table of budget chatter, and then we can wrap the lovely budget discussion up at some point for this week. But one of the questions I have is the longer this goes on, and I guess in a moment we could, you know, force somebody like Anthony, who likes to prognosticate on this podcast anyway, when he thinks the budget will be signed, he's giving me the look like, no. Because we were half right. We said the summer recess, and we got the assembly right.
Yeah.
But the longer this goes on, doesn't this jeopardize the very ambitious agenda that's been put forward on other issues? And the number one issue is health care. I mean, you've got to think, because there was some private conversation this week that there is not a lot of engagement on the health care negotiations right now, that the health care negotiations have come almost to a standstill. And you've got to wonder, the clock is ticking on the legislative calendar. There's only so much longer they've got. Doesn't the budget start to eat into that?
Yeah. Health care and water storage, I think, are the two big issues that we expected to be talking about through the recess and then into August as well. So the longer this goes on, I mean, it does make it more difficult. Now, whether water storage, I think to put something on the ballot, they're going to need 2/3 vote. And there's a question of whether health care has to be done with Republican cooperation or not, whether it's a simple majority vote. It certainly doesn't bode well, I mean, for the political climate going into the rest of the year.
Is it? Does anybody have the feeling that the agenda was just way too ambitious this year or not?
Well, I think we all speculated about that early in early in January, and that's certainly a valid question. Although, you know, the agenda was hugely ambitious last year.
Well said,
year
well
too.
Spoken.
Thank you.
Action!
I work
John,
in public
come
radio.
On.
Yeah, but the agenda last year was somewhat staggeringly ambitious too, and a lot of it got done. So, I do wonder about healthcare, which was supposed to be the governor's marquee issue this year, and whether that's just getting delayed and bogged. And
especially if you're not having a lot of active negotiations on it at this point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now because of the standoff, one of the things we're starting to hear again is Senator Parada talking about engaging this fall in a reform of the budget process of. You know, and so whether that could overwhelm everything.
Which was a fascinating discussion at the end of the week, because Parada's been saying that now for a while. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
years.
With all due respect to Parada, he started talking about it at least strongly several weeks ago.
Well, he's been talking about it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Fair
yeah.
enough, right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he really started running it, ramping it back up. And then the governor talked about it yesterday.
Right.
And the irony was just heavy over the room to me that the governor tried a budget reform plan. It was called Proposition 76.
Yeah.
And it went down to a stunning defeat because, I mean, once you started tinkering with the budget right. idea that the governor has broad authority to cut what he wants, to mm-hmm. declare emergencies, to cut even into education in times of an emergency, I mean, it right. just depends on how you rework the
oh,
budget.
Absolutely.
The budget's problematic.
Yeah. And remember,
Senator Parada, that was in 2005, who said, you know, that there are some valid points to be made that we should rework the budget and, you know, maybe... And I don't remember the exact wording. Anthony, tell me if you do. But he said something like, and maybe part of that problem may have a little something to do with education funding.
Saying that everything should be on the table, including
right,
Proposition
right.
98.
Right.
Which
and
is,
Proposition 98, which is the minimum school funding guarantee, is sacrosanct to the California
result,
Teachers Association,
Parada,
one of the biggest Democratic. Yeah.
Parada got quite a lot of grief from the CTA.
Exactly.
Putting up billboards in his district
yeah.
and really sort of... that relationship was strained, and I think mm-hmm. remained so.
Yeah. Of course, Arnold got more grief from the CTA
yes.
in 2005.
Yes, indeed.
Well, it's an annual rite of passage, unfortunately, this budget mess. And I'm not sure it's a rite of passage. I'm not actually sure I like what I just said. I won't edit it, though, in the interest of not editing out myself to make myself sound better. It's a right of something, and it'll be you know, and whether someone can actually get together to on a compromise of reforming the budget process, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
You were going to say something.
No,
yes.
I thought you were segueing with the rite of passage thing.
To
which rite of passage?
The
Tell
governors.
Us.
The governors.
Okay.
Anthony, what's the question of the week, Anthony?
That is the question of the week, Kate.
You had a line. You had a great line. The governor turns...
You two are like the Connie Chung and Dan Rather of podcasts.
Which one am I?
Remains to be seen.
I'm more Midwestern than you are, so...
And I'm more into Maury Povich than you.
The governor, our governor, turned 60 on Monday. And Anthony has a question for us all.
I do. I honestly don't know what you're talking about.
Kate has the question. Come on, Kate. This was your idea.
Oh,
this is
God.
The final word for this week.
This has just completely gone awry here now. But Anthony was going to ask us all, what do you get the governor who has everything?
What should the what? You're right. What birthday present would the governor, a governor like Arnold Schwarzenegger, want for his 60th?
And
birthday?
Kate and I both decided that John had a tremendous answer to that question.
Well, the
because
only thing
he
I could...
already has so many reptilian
well,
silver-tipped
the only thing I could
embossed
come up with
cowboy
was,
boots.
The only thing I could come up with was cowboy boots made out of some kind of recycled material that didn't contribute to greenhouse gases.
Yes.
You know, but that's not even good.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
lame. Let's just, I think suffice it to say, yeah. did you have some ideas, Kate? What
would
you get together?
Some peach schnapps and schnitzel. No, schnitzel is schnitzel.
Right.
Yeah. It's Beitzel. Something that ends in a zel.
If anybody has any better ideas on Austrian food, just email them in. But
John Burton, we're talking to you.
Yeah, Schlag.
Right.
Right. Schlag.
Right. The former Senate pro tem was quite the Austrian food man with the governor.
Yeah.
Maybe suffice it to say the best present to get the governor would be a budget.
Yes.
Because that would take a large headache off of his list, I would assume.
Yes.
Well, with that... Oh, my goodness. Yes? this is what you do in broadcasting sometimes. You scribble a note and you hand it to the person, like, 2 minutes, wrap up. Stop spitting into the microphone.
We should have passed the wrap-up note about 3 minutes
right.
ago.
Right. The wrap-up, by my clock, the wrap-up note was way long overdue. Now, Kate's note says, remind everyone that she'll be gone for a while, as our good friend Ms. Fulmar is taking the walk down the aisle.
Yes.
To so to speak. She's getting married. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
And going on a honeymoon, and
we
she'll
think
be
he's...
gone. We what?
We think.
We
yeah.
hope. We hope. And in the interim, we'll have to find someone to fill those shoes yet again.
Sorry.
Oh, well. Such is life.
So
we'll
good.
Do this for Anthony in a few more months.
That's true. Anthony will be walking down a similar aisle.
Different aisle.
Different aisle. Different place. With that, boy, the rap note really should have come a long time ago. With that, that'll do it for this edition of the Capital Notes podcast. For look at Anthony's got his head in his hands.
Good, John. Tell your radio listeners, look at Anthony. Good.
Oh, my goodness. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly and Kate Fulmar, our pro bono special political, soon-to-be-married political
roving.
Correspondent, roving correspondent. She's moved the microphone away, even. She's done. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio and the California Report. We'll see you next time.